can go. I like this. Right, so I'm going to be talking about heating and cooling in galaxy clusters, and my list of collaborators. I've been working on this field for 10 years now. Feeling like an old man. And I've accrued a lot of collaborators over the years, and in fact, a lot of people in this room are my collaborators. So without further ado, I will move on. Now, in spite of a rather chaotic formation history, it turns out that from cluster to cluster, there is a near universal shape for the dark matter distribution. You know, there are some variations. And that deviation from universality can be captured in the concentration parameter. But this concentration parameter itself is relatively well behaved in the sense that you can calculate its trend with mass and calculate its scatter with at any given mass. The gas distribution, which is of course important for the topic at hand, shows much more variability. The variations in the gas distribution are not trivial. And the origin of this variability is still very much an open question. Now, in talking about variations in the gas density distribution, and in the next few slides, it'll become clear what I'm describing, I do want to say that we already know, and it's been known since the 1990s, that if you have gas falling into a cluster and it's simply being heated by shocks due to gravitational infall, that this gas distribution, the resulting gas distribution, does not give you the observational results. And that I will very quickly, just illustrate with a relatively old slide that I have, which shows various correlations between X-ray quantities and X-ray optical quantities. And I can add on to this thing X-ray SZ quantities. And the main points can be illustrated by looking at this plot right here, which is luminosity temperature plot. The prediction that you would get from gas simply being heated by gravitational infall or shocks due to gravitational infall is shown in blue in all of these curves. And the data, as you can see, is in some cases just simply offset by an amplitude. In other cases, it actually traces a different slope. So this is something that has been well known. It's something that endless number of papers have been written on. And so I'm not going to focus on this aspect. I take this to be a given. What I am referring to when I talk about the variability is that if you look at a luminosity temperature plot again, and this time focus at a particular temperature, what you see is that there is a huge spread in luminosity. In fact, it's a factor 10 spread in luminosity. You can see this also if you look at if you plot the Compton Y parameter through the cluster center, which is what is plotted in this case, that at a given temperature, there is a huge spread, a huge scatter that is apparent in the Y naught parameter. And there are many other quantities of this kind that you can go ahead and plot to show the same feature. And the question is, where is this variability coming from? Now, to illustrate what I meant by that simply heated by gravitational infall is incapable of accounting for the various trends, and that you almost are driven to the fact that you need some sort of non-gravitational heating, we represented that non-gravitational heating in the form of a entropy, the entropy or an entropy core, an isentropic core in the gas density distribution, which is essentially shown over here. You have the gas density or the gas entropy profile in clusters. And in the various plots, what you're seeing, and I'd like you to focus on the red curves, what you're seeing is the entropy floor for the gas taking on different values. Over here, we're taking the luminosity that is being predicted by these various entropy profiles. And I should mention that when I say entropy, I'm not referring to the thermodynamic entropy, but rather a commonly used proxy for the entropy. I think I was supposed to turn this thing on. But
it's being recorded.
A commonly used proxy for the entropy, which is given in terms of observable quantities. And so, you know, alternatively, it's been referred to as S or K, and you'll see both of these variables showing up throughout the various different plots. What you have here are curves for luminosity mass relationships that take, that correspond to different values of the core entropy. And when I refer to the non-gravitational, you can see that the mean trend here is being described by a core entropy value of 200 to 300. But if you wish to describe the entire scatter there, then at least in the form that I've chosen to do it, in the form of the entropy cores, then you're basically being driven to a situation where you need clusters to have variable entropy cores. In other words, at any given mass, you have systems that have different values of the entropy cores, and that these entropy cores can range from 50 is the smallest number up there, but really we now know that it can go all the way down to 1. Typically it's around 10, but goes all the way up to 700. So we have a gas density distribution that has a core value in the center that varies dramatically.
So Rick,
yeah.
There's that one point, so in the right plot, there's that one point, really massive cluster, that is really,
that one.
That is, so that's just a ridiculously underluminous cluster that...
Sure, so you have to remember that these data points are basically a sample of clusters being observed. Not all of them are going to be in hydrostatic equilibrium. So you could have a cluster that has suffered a major merger.
So there's
and
some
is,
scatter there that's from...
That's right. There is some scatter that is due to just variations resulting from mergers, but it's at a 10% level.
Typically, these actually move the clusters along the scaling relation, not too far apart.
Yeah, so I'll come back to that. But it does actually shift them while they are out of hydrostatic equilibrium. You do get a scatter that shifts.
It's a very short time scale.
It's a very short time scale, I agree. Yeah.
Do they scatter down in luminosity?
Well, they do tend to scatter down in luminosity when they're hit. Now you could ask the question, why do I need to worry about variations in entropy core? Suppose I still stuck to my mean entropy core of 250 or 300 and ask, what about that variation in the concentration? That would give me some variation in the gas density profiles, even though the entropy core itself is fixed at a given value. Does that scatter account for the trends that you see or the dispersion that you see? And the answer is no. When you look at luminosity mass relationship, you find that the concentration scatter is not sufficiently large enough to capture the full spread in luminosity. It does, however, and it's worth making note of this, that quantities like temperature mass are completely accounted for by concentration. So in that sense, the temperature is tracing or is giving you a measure of the dark matter directly, whereas luminosity is clearly sensitive to the actual gas physics that's going on.
What definition of temperature do you use here in the simulation?
So in that particular plot, the definition was luminosity weighted, so not spectroscopic temperature.
And you're comparing this to the spectroscopic temperature in the data?
We were comparing it to spectroscopic, but at the clusters that we have looked at, that trend is small because the cores have been taken out. right? So these are, remember in the old days, everybody used to ignore the central cores, and then when you put the cores back in, the scatter tends to change. But in the temp mass temperature plot, it didn't seem to make very much difference.
Do you understand this?
Do I understand this? It was a 10% shift or something like that?
Yeah, I think comparing to the different temperature would give you a normalization shift. But as far as the scatter and the slope, I don't think it's a big effect, right? So because that's what we were looking at here.
Yeah, slope I agree, but for the scatter I'm not that sure.
Okay. Oh, we didn't look.
Yeah, but I mean the scatter itself is already very small in the temperature. Anyways, it's a 10% scatter across at a given mass. So you're right. It may require a little bit more thinking, but it doesn't expand it much more than what you see from the concentration. The impact of varying the central entropy for the X-ray observation is shown on this particular slide. When you look at the gas density distribution and you vary the central entropy, you're basically adding extra pressure support in the center, and so you're getting flatter, more fluffier, less dense cores in the center, whereas at low entropies, you have high density, more strongly peaked. These are clusters where the cooling times are very short, less than a gigayear, and they are generically called in literature, referred to as cool core clusters, whereas these clusters that have a large flat profiles, which are beta profile light and have large cores, have long cooling times. The cooling times can be significantly longer than the cluster formation timescales, and they are known as the non-cool core clusters. And of course, since there is a direct relationship between gas density distribution and the X-ray surface brightness profiles, you basically see the similar trends where gas at low entropies, you have a strongly peaked X-ray surface brightness profile, whereas when you have high entropy, you start to see a core developing in the X-ray surface brightness profile.
So what is the definition of cooling temperature?
What is the
cooling time? What is the definition of T cooling?
It's just given by the energy quantum, the K, MKT divided by, or 3/2 MKT divided by luminosity.
This is in simulation, right? Or is it in observation? These curves.
These curves are model curves and superposed on that. So you see the model curves are shown in black here and the data is shown in the color.
Okay.
Now, when we started this game and we started looking at and started arguing for entropy variations on the cores, the Chandra XMM had come online and they were starting to show entropy profiles. This is what it looked like. And whenever we talked about these things, we were told that we were living in a fictional land. But of course, you have to remember that when the X-ray observations were taking place, early on, the X-ray observers tended to focus on what they considered to be interesting clusters. And at that time, the interesting clusters were cool core clusters. And so that's a highly biased sample. And over time, that has changed. I don't know if Ken is here in the audience. He's a postdoc at the University of Waterloo who has done phenomenal work mining the Chandra archives and has been over time developing a more and more complete sample of entropy profiles. And you can see that his first attempt at doing that has already started to fill in that gap. And this is his most recent version that's just come out in the AppGA supplement. And you can see that there is indeed a huge dispersion in the core entropy profile, core entropy values, that goes all the way from numbers as high as 400 or 500 all the way down to 1. And that is represented by a histogram that he has made. And this is a histogram. Now, you have to remember that it's still archival data. It's not a homogeneous sample where, a complete sample has been created. So features like this, as interesting as they are, and as tempted as I am to write a paper, and I will, but you know, in the back of my mind, I too know that you know, we have to be a little bit cautious about this. Also, you know, whether this bump just sort of becomes a continuous tail or not, these are things. So I don't want you to focus on these valleys and valleys in these things. What I really want you to concentrate on and focus on is that there indeed is a large distribution of core entropy values, and that you have systems where you have cooling times greater than 5 gigayears. You have systems where the cooling time is less than 1 gigayear. And a fraction of systems with cooling times less than 1 gigayear is about 40 to 50%. Fraction of classical cool core systems, these are systems with entropies of core entropies of 10 or less are about 15 to 20. Everything that you've been hearing, or most of the PR work that you've been hearing about clusters, is actually focusing in on these 15 to 20% sample. There is a 30 to 40% sample of 30 to 40% in this particular histogram that are high entropy systems that have cooling times in the center of greater than 5 gigayears, and they typical non-cool core clusters have entropies of between 200 to 300, but they have tails extending up to 700, and this is where it comes back to you that, you know, there is quite likely that the very extreme end of the histogram is in fact systems that have been smashed together and are in R.
But then you wouldn't trust these values if these are not relaxed because you don't have the right mass either.
No, agreed. Yes. Yeah, so that's a contaminant in this kind of treatment that still needs to be looked at much more carefully. I will mention the flip side of that comment that you made, which is a comment that X-ray observers often raise, but you know, there's a problem with that idea too. So when I get to it, I will comment on that.
The question is there a one-to-one relation between the cooling time and the entropy core? The entropy floor, because I mean, you say that you up there is T cool, or down there is entropy, core entropy. So this one, is there one-to-one correlation?
Yes, there is. Yes.
They fit this basically in the paper, and I see this very clear distinctive sort of two-piece if you do this for several methods. Yeah. And actually, what is even more strange is actually the absence of Lyman of H alpha emission, radio, or any sort of cooling indicator in the
in the non-cool
large entropy core systems. Yeah. That I think the most stringent sort of result is that it makes you believe that this are indeed two different populations.
Well, or a continuum.
Or a continuum, but at least that, you know, classes exist there that do not suffer the cooling effect of the over the Hubble time.
Yeah. So the question is, and a question that's of interest to this particular audience is, what are the implications of this varying entropy course for Sunyaev-Zaldovich effect? And in a paper with Gil Holder, we calculated for systems of different masses and different central core entropies, 10, 100, 200, 300, 400, 500, we calculated the pressure profiles, which is what is shown there, and the projected Compton Y parameter for the same systems. And the plots show that as you increase S, and none of this is surprising, it's basically what's expected, that as you, at a given mass, as you increase the core entropy, just as the gas density decreases and the pressure decreases in the center, the pressure profile flattens, the Compton parameter also decreases in amplitude. You get a flatter projected Y profile, and you start to develop a signal out in the outskirts. Basically, the gas is just expanding moving, reorganizing itself beyond the original core. With increasing mass, the fractional change becomes smaller, and for masses about 10 to the 14 and higher, these changes are, you know, more or less negligible. They're very tiny.
What are you assuming about the gas mass fractions in the groups? Like, what's your boundary conditional?
In this case, we assume universal.
Right.
Just to give you a sense of, in a visual sense, what is happening, this is a map that was made. The pictures that are shown are a 0.85 square section of a larger map. The cosmology is shown there, and all the clusters in a given picture have the same core entropy. So at this point, we have made no attempt to try and build in a distribution of core entropies. When we were working on this, it was not clear what the distribution was. We could, at this point, attempt to do this using Ken's distribution, or at least use that as a guide. But basically, this picture is a concrete version of what I just described, that the bright, small objects become fuzzier and disappear, and you see basically an extended gas or extended Compton map that is being generated when the entropy is increased.
Are those different parts of the star?
Yes. Yes. Yes, systems also move around with entropy. You can go ahead and do a distribution of the pixel values, in this case for the unfiltered map. And as you would expect, there's a slight decrease of the very brightest pixels. But surprisingly, it's not very, very sensitive. That's because the brightest pixel points, by and large, are being dominated by the most massive systems, where the effect is not that prominent. You have, in the intermediate region, an increase in the signal as you increase entropy, and this is coming from the fact that you have these extended cores that are showing up. And so in that sense, the high-resolution microkelvin probes of the SZ sky would allow us to get a handle on the entropy variations in the systems, and in fact would become a probe of the astrophysics that affects the intracluster medium. But the discussion here is on cosmology.
So can I ask you something?
Sure.
So here you're assuming that you have the same S for all clusters of all masses, but could it be possible that more mass clusters have not had a higher entropy core and less mass clusters? So then the effect could be just as prominent for more mass clusters.
If there is a systematic trend, that's a problem that we haven't addressed or even looked at. I mean, at this point, the data is just starting to come in where you still have, as I say, inhomogeneous samples, but at least you're starting to get a handle on the distribution. Now, the issue you're asking is, let's divide up that sample by mass and see if there's a systematic trend. I agree, it's a very interesting problem, but hasn't been done yet.
It's a related question, but it's about the spatial distribution. So I think you're assuming that you're injecting uniform entropy already here, right?
In the cluster cores, yes.
So are you truncating the entropy at certain radius, much below the mere radius, or are you injecting entropy everywhere?
So the model is, and I'll come back, how about if I come back and describe it, and then at that point you can ask me this question if I don't answer it already.
Okay.
Since I know you're interested, I will spend a few minutes just describing that.
Okay.
But for the purpose at hand, I think what you should... The takeaway point for clusters right now is assume that basically the entropy in the outskirts of the cluster is more or less what it would be unheated, and then only in the center there is a heating going on.
Right. But so if you assume that at the implementation level, you know, when you have a model, you inject uniform entropy, and for a massive system, it doesn't affect anything the outskirts because BL shocks
are much stronger.
It's much stronger,
right.
But for cooler systems,
yes,
that may not be true.
Well, this is why you're seeing the effects in the low mass systems.
Exactly.
Right.
However, if you think that the entropy is coming from preheating, then this kind of procedure may work. But if they're coming from something aging field at the center, then this procedure wouldn't work.
Right.
Right? Well, you would think that the entropy would be raised only at the center, not at the outer spread.
That's a fair point. So let me come back and address that.
Okay.
Because I don't think it's coming from the AGN in the center.
Right.
Well, so this entropy variation will be degenerate with sigma I. I mean, if you change your sigma I, will this go up and down?
Oops. So there is a degeneracy in the intermediate scale, but the interesting thing is that there is a regime where that was insensitive to the gas variations, but is very sensitive to sigma A. So, you know, again, since this conference is on cosmology with SZ, the punchline, which I'll repeat a couple of times, is that it's not bleak. In the sense that if you are intelligent, you choose your regions carefully of where you want to do your study. There are regions in the distributions like that which are insensitive to the gas physics, and are still very sensitive to cosmology. So you can get a handle on cosmology. Of course, from my perspective, it's the astrophysics that's more interesting. But still.
Do you think it can combine number counts or, I mean, basically with the CL to make this?
So I have a power spectrum that's coming up.
So how many of the, how badly would you have to violate your assumptions for the existing X-ray data to make this point not work, to have the massive clusters get puffed up enough so that the cluster physics does become degenerate with cosmology? And at some point, if you
heat up the clusters,
if you heat up even massive clusters badly enough, this will, you know, you will start to affect the cosmology.
That's right.
I'm just curious how close we are to that regime, whether it's completely ruled out by existing data.
I don't think at least based on the X-ray data, you're nowhere near that regime. If you ask me exactly how much, what the core entropy should be.
No, I really was qualitatively
okay,
anywhere near that.
But range. I think the number has to be something of order 1500, so the entropy has to be double. The outskirts of the large clusters, the entropy is getting up to 3000. So you really need to get close to that in order to push the gas out of the large clusters. The SZ power spectrum is shown there. And again, as you would expect, adding in entropy and flattening the cores in the centers of the systems leads to dampening of powers on very small scales. But by small, we're talking about tens of kiloparsecs. There is a zone here, which I gather is a zone that at least up to relatively recently was the bandpass region in which the power was typically calculated. It's between L of 3000 and L of 6000. This is a region that's probing the intermediate scales of order 10 hundreds of kiloparsecs and is typically getting contribution from clusters of masses 10 to the 14 to 10 to the 15 solar masses. And in that region, again, the effect is relatively weak. And I have shown there a pixel distribution for a sky map that's filtered so that you were only seeing what's in that, you're only seeing the power that's coming in from that particular bandpass. And here in black and blue, you see the distribution corresponding to central entropy of 10 and central entropy of 500. And you can see that there is a very, very slight difference. But again, the difference from cosmology is much, much stronger. So just to recap this little bit.
Can you just go backward?
So the variations here are in sigma A.
You're just looking at the power spectrum 3 to 6000.
It's the filtered sky map, yeah. So again, if you the main point is that it's definitely possible to do cosmology with SZ, as long as you are in a regime that is not sensitive to gas physics. And so that could require, that would mean either choosing a particular choice of bandpass or a regime, or coming up with a statistic that is sensitive to the regions and scales that you're interested in. That was a hand that went up.
Where do you basically cut and truncate your clusters at which radio? How much would you go to the far field?
So the clusters were truncated at the virial radius.
But there's a substantial contribution actually if you go out to 3 over here or 5 over here that actually impacts these scales there in the far spectrum.
So we played around with that. We've found that if it shifts everything sort of globally at like the 10% level as you scale how far out you integrate. But I was mainly interested in
any
relative effects.
This is based in simple sort of cluster models, or is it based on analytic
approaches? This is based on Pinocchio models and Pinocchio models, so semi-analytic approaches.
So there is more structure in hiding models, but that sort of feeds in here, so not just the normal.
Yeah, I can definitely believe that that you will get different answers if you integrate further.
So you're talking about the two halo attempt, right?
So not only the far field.
He's also talking about the possibility that you have filaments and whatnot that could be contributing.
That's some sort of two halo.
Yeah. That's not really two halo. Even one halo can change by factor of 50%, maybe by going from one video radius to three.
Yes.
But three video radius is a good conversion point.
By how much?
By 50%? I think an analog, let's see. 500 is like, not very high. Actually, very high L is insensitive to the cutoff,
right?
But really low because you are seeing the gas from the massive cluster nearby.
Yeah,
right.
You're basically imaging coma.
Exactly. Yeah, something like that. Right. Yeah, yeah. But very high L actually the sensitivity to gas is.
So what he's talking about is the fact that you're embedded in an overdense region. There's filaments. Extra structure that's not being captured in just one halo.
That's very small effect, though.
Do you know for sure?
Because, any time it's
Have you done a calculation for your simulations of SZ effects?
I haven't looked at that particular question now.
Okay. And observationally, asking what the SC power spectrum is doing at LL500 at 50% level. I mean, we'll never see it. So.
And it'll be lost in the gas physics of a single cluster at that point.
Yeah, I care about frequencies. You can be
useful. Yeah, that's true.
All right.
Just null numbers.
10 minutes.
Okay. Yeah. So there's different entropies. We'll probably give you different numbers of function of fluxes that way.
Sorry,
if you look at the sky and you try to count objects as a function of the flux. So there's different entropies will give you different numbers of function of flux.
That's right.
So you could, in principle, combine the flux
get a number of
this pixel to break your sigmoid versus entropy.
Yeah, we didn't try that. So that sounds perfectly reasonable. So as I was saying, the main recap point is that clearly there is a very high potential for doing cosmology with SZ. But for me, the interest is in providing new insights into the astrophysics of the intracluster medium. For example, amongst the questions that one could try and address is when exactly does this heating occur? And in that instance, we could get a handle on what exactly is doing the heating. Now, since I am talking, and I guess I have 10 minutes, so I can't do this, I was going to stop for a little ad read and pitch a software program that we've developed, which is we call it JACO, Joint Analysis of Cluster Observations. It's an attempt to constrain the dark matter, stellar, and gas distributions in clusters using X-ray data, which includes Chandra and XMM X-ray data, SZ data, weak lensing data, and optical photometry and spectroscopy data. So basically, it involves modeling the stellar populations in the BCGs, using gas, constraining the gas distribution from X-ray. And as said, there is a X-ray spectroscopy that's directly folded in. Weak lensing gives you an attempt at the projected mass. And what's interesting in this game is that we find that SZ data plays a very important role, particularly if the gas density profile is known from X-ray data, for example, then the combination of weak lensing and SZ data actually provide orthogonal constraints on the total mass distribution. And so having both of them simultaneously actually reduces the error bars and allows us to get a much tighter determination of these quantities. So the reason for pitching this is that if anybody out there has X-ray data, SZ data lying around and is interested in attempting to do something like this, then talk to me. If you're not interested in talking to me, you just want to go and look at the paper and do it yourself, I've given you a reference there that you can look up, and I think Andy Madavi has made Jacko available. Now,
7 minutes?
7 minutes, right, okay. The origin of this entropy variation is an issue that I was going to spend the next few minutes just quickly running over, so I will do it very quickly. The common picture that has existed is that you start with systems and that the stable systems, the equilibrium systems, are the cool core cluster systems, and the rest of the scatter is really coming from something being done to the cool core cluster systems that's moving them up and around, and then at some point they will either settle down or get hung up. And so basically that's the picture we have, and the first process that has often been thrown around is mergers. Mergers are a common part of the hierarchical picture, and while there are high entropy systems that are clear mergers, they are unrelaxed systems, and therefore applying this kind of analysis to try and get a handle on the entropy profile is meaningless. But if you do it, you get very high values, and so that has been often used as an anecdotal argument that all of those scattered points are really merger systems, and we've had endless trouble trying to convince some of our colleagues in the X-ray community on this. And so over the years, we basically had to sift through the X-ray data carefully ourselves to find systems. And at the end, we have a compilation of high entropy systems that are about as relaxed as they get. And of course, the flip side is that there are low entropy systems like the poster child for the cool core cluster system, which is the Perseus, which is in the throes of a merger. And so, and as many of you who have been doing numerical simulations and modeling of hierarchical systems appreciate, if you look hard enough in a hierarchical system, you'll always find substructure. And so the question is not how, whether there is substructure, it's at what level do you define substructure as being relevant. Now, in the case of CDM, you can go ahead and do this in Lambda CDM. You can go ahead and do this experiment and ask, are there enough mergers to shift low entropy systems into high entropy systems? And can you account for the scatter, the total number of high entropy systems that we see? The answer is no. There just isn't enough major mergers, because you really do need major mergers to cause that kind of damage. And then at the end of the day, it turns out that they are very, very short-lived. You hit them, the gas heats up, you have dense cores in the center, they radiate very efficiently, and when they act as high-entropy systems, they are very short-lived transients, as Christoph mentioned, and they would appear as obvious racks. So, there's no way you'd mistake them for relaxed systems at this point. So the idea that you can do this with mergers just doesn't seem to be part of the equation, and this is something that Christoph mentioned, that when you do calculate the LD relationship generically, so if you look from, if you look at the starting point and the relax point, you find that they tend to just move along in the LD plane rather than move them across. And what my answer to Christoph was that, well, temporarily they shift across and do fill in part of that scatter, but as he mentioned and as I indicated, these are very, very short-lived transients. So, you know, the total fraction of systems that you'd expect to actually catch up there is very small. Trying to account for this large scatter is virtually impossible using mergers.
So did you do that with non-core initial ones? Something that started with, say, two high entropy ones? Because in that case, they can't really radiate. They won't radiate as efficiently.
Yeah, but the trick is to get them to high entropy in the first place, right? So we were trying to, well, so you're right, that is something that we're doing. But what we were trying to do is first deal with the first problem, which is here are the relaxed systems, and these are just scattered merger remnants. And that can't be the case. What about AGNs in the center? Certainly when we look at cool core systems today, we see that the cooling flow in them is tempered. If they're not shut off, by the way. We actually have evidence of every BCG in cool core systems forming stars at about 40 solar masses per year. And the colors are correspondingly slightly bluer than what you would normally have if the BCG was not forming stars and it was just old elliptical population. That was a mouthful. Nonetheless, a lot of these systems have active AGNs going on in the center, and these active AGNs are believed to be tempering the cooling flow so that you don't get 1,000 solar masses a year cooling out, you get 100 or less solar masses per year cooling out. The question is, can you have a massive AGN outburst that can convert these low entropy systems into high entropy systems? If you want to take a cluster that is in a cool core state, so the central entropy is 10 or less, and you want to turn it into a cluster with a central entropy of 100, you require 10 to the 16, 3 ergs, and the outburst times are about between 10 to the 7 to 10 to the 8 years, and so you require a power greater than 10 to the 48 ergs coming out from the central AGN. This is 100 times more powerful than the most powerful outburst observed to date. And you want to do it in 30 to 50% of the systems in order to generate your non-cooled core population. Just doesn't seem likely.
How do we know all the systems are cooled core to begin with?
We don't. Now, in fact, I would argue that they probably weren't to begin with. But what I'm doing here is, and it's sort of historical, we've been dealing with criticisms that all the systems start out as cool core, and there were various processes that shifted them up. We're just ruling them out. And in fact, you know, we had a question here that why couldn't an AGN in the center do it? And this is why. And the physics is relatively simple. When you have a cluster that's assembled, it's like blowing up a bomb underwater. You have to lift the entire column of water up. And so that takes a lot of energy and a lot of work. It's easier to do the same thing before the cluster actually forms, which is why preheating is what I've been pushing. Right. OK, fair enough. So to cut this short. Right. The picture that we've been advocating is that it is AGNs, but not AGNs after these massive systems form, but the effect of AGNs prior to these to the formation of these massive systems. For example, during the epoch of galaxy formation, which is also corresponds roughly with the epoch of AGN activity. So at redshift 2 or so, you have a lot of these systems going off, the more massive systems have not yet collapsed and virialized. You have galaxies that are blowing winds. The fact that you need this kind of feedback has been argued as being critical if you want the luminosity function for galaxies to correspond more closely with the observed systems. Without AGN feedback of this kind, you end up with massive, very bright blue elliptical galaxies. You want to get rid of the gas in the systems and you want to quench star formation. AGN seem to be playing a role, and at least in the current models of galaxy formation, seem to be necessary. We also see that powerful jets can extend well beyond their host galaxies, and I'm just going to quickly flip through, and this is basically the punchline that I wanted to get to, that the picture that we've been advocating is that we have outflows generated during this epoch of galaxy AGN formation that is going to blow gas and affect their local environments, and that the local environment will, the shocks that result will heat up the gas that is in fact what I'm calling preheating, and then when that gas falls back into the larger system, the lower entropy is already being truncated by the floor that's created by the shock heating of the gas during the outflow period. Why are there variations? You expect variations if the AGN is doing its damage, because the AGN power is in fact a function of many variables. For example, what the local density is when the gas is being heated. The lower the density for a given energy outburst, lower the density, the higher the entropy that that gas will be raised to. So if the cluster is starting to already form, the entropy will be lower, and you get a central core that's lower. Also, the black hole power itself, the AGN outburst itself, is a sensitive function of the spin of the black hole. And again, I'm going to shamelessly plug a paper that we've been working on. Andrew Benson and I have just finished a paper where we've come up with an analytic model for the outflow power from a black hole. This is a plot from that paper that's showing the efficiency eta of J as a function of spin. And the blue curve is what I'd like you to focus on, because that's the total eta. The points on these things are numerical simulation results from Julian Krolik and company, who have been studying AGN systems and jets from AGN systems. And these are horrendously complicated systems with full GR built into it. So the fact that we actually managed to get curves that look anything reasonable compared to their simulations was already a huge shock to our system. And so, you know, if you're skeptical, that's fine. We were amazingly surprised.
So what power is this?
This is the actual power output from an AGN.
Power that's so, coupled to the gas, or power that?
No, this is straight. This is just the power in the outflow in the form of winds and collimated burst, kinetic energy outflow. Yeah. So yeah, there is additional factors that would go in, which would define the efficiency of coupling to the gas, et cetera, et cetera. The bottom line here is that, you know, if you're starting to model AGN outflows, this is the first point. This is where you start. But the main point that I want to make here is that the spin of the black hole can have a huge impact on how much power that black hole will put out for a given mass accretion rate. And so there is a huge variation. There are many variables at play. To us, it doesn't seem very surprising that you have a variation in the entropy cores or the preheating levels that can take place. So I finish there.
More questions, comments?
Usually the critics sort of against these preheating models was actually the low central value of the entropy in the group scale, basically.
Yes. And that you can see that the true test of the model will come on group scales. Now, there's an interesting problem that associated with group scales. Groups are very low surface brightness systems intrinsically. The groups that peak above the sky levels are the ones that are already very, very sharply peaked. So it's not surprising that you see groups, that the groups that you see are groups with the low entropy in the center. The challenge is to find other ways of defining groups, for example, optically selected groups. and then going out and looking for X-ray from these systems. The attempt has been made several times by people like John Mulcahy and Trevor Pointman and company. They have systems that are that have 20 to 30 members. They have this, you know, they've determined velocity dispersions. They're matched in velocity dispersions. Some of them seem to show X-rays, some of them don't. The challenge is to now take the ones that don't show X-ray and go and beat them down, take very deep exposures to see if you actually do detect X-rays at some point. Problem is the taxase, no X-rays, probably not bound systems, not time, not giving you time. But that's the kind of hard work that needs to be done. And if the preheating picture is right, then raising the entropy to 100 to 200 on these very low mass systems will basically just take them right down and reduce them to be very low surface brightness systems, which you won't pick up in 10 kilosecond observations or 20 kilosecond observations. But that's the test. I mean, if you can detect groups that have very faint X-rays in the center, and you know, the interesting point is that Alistair Sanderson in Birmingham has one group which has fairly high entropy in the center. Now the question is it the tip of the iceberg? But yes, your point about the groups was dead on.
So maybe SD experiments can do something about groups?
So in the, you know, I didn't mention this, but the confusion level that we were finding was that a few times 10 to the 14, right?
Well, 10 to the 8, but
right.
I mean, the SD flux goes as mass as the 5/3. And you know, X-ray satellites are much more sensitive intrinsically. You know? So
right.
It's hard for SD to get down below 10 to the 14 kilo masses.
You
can all the action.
I mean, you could do it with the power spectrum though. If you had a, I mean, presumably you could constrain these models by measuring the SD power spectrum at very, very small on the scale. So.
Yeah. You show the plot. As you raise S center, then SD power spectrum.
Right, because you're not worrying about trying to find individual,
right.
You're just looking at
because
at
because
the
because on your scale,
so.
It's really kind of problems.
But those power spectra on high L's, those are spherical models, and when you compare it with simulations, the simulations generally don't killed as quickly as these bond models do with high L, and that's probably electricity and substructure and mergers. Just a lot of crap from high L.
But if you had a truncation, then notice.
Yeah. But you'd probably be better off looking nearby with some sensitive multi frequency. I mean, maybe Planck would do that.
But you can also cross correlate with the optically selected groups, even though you can detect individual groups. So one final question. Okay, good. You already had a lot of questions. So
yeah, it was fun.
Let's thank Arif again.